Well, thank you for that kind and generous introduction, Bert. Thank you for the audience will be much relieved to hear that my speech is probably shorter than the CV that Bert referred to in the materials. Distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, it is truly an honor and a privilege to address you today and to be able to offer a few opening remarks. Look at this audience. Can you hear me in the back? I asked that question with a measure of trepidation because, as Bert said, I'm a professor at the London School of Economics. I was a student there 40 years ago, and I had a professor who began each of his lectures in the old theater at the LSE with that question, can you hear me in the back? He did that until one of my fellow students shouted out from the back, yes, I can hear you, but I am very happy to exchange places with someone who cannot. And so I've always worried a little bit about asking that question. In any event, when I finish these remarks, we will have the benefit of a panel discussion about systemic risk and the role of securities regulation in mitigating that risk. One of the objectives of IOSCO is the reduction of systemic risk. And you will be challenged to question the notion that systemic risk is only a matter for prudential regulators and central banks. And I'm sure that you will be further challenged and encouraged to consider the specific role that securities market regulators can best play to reduce systemic risk and ensure financial stability. But before we convene the panel, I want to pose another challenge. I want you to think outside the current regulatory debate. Just for a moment, I want you to pause just for a moment as you contemplate systemic risk, and I want you to think about courts and judges and how they fit in. You know, our newspapers are full of articles about financial market regulation. Parliamentarians and congressmen, I don't have to tell this audience, are not shy about weighing in on this subject too. Regulation as a form of preventive medicine and the importance that we attach to getting that right. And that is as it should be. Preventive medicine in matters of both personal and financial market health is important. Moreover, in the recent crisis, the malaise afflicting the financial markets had arguably reached epidemic proportions. Financial market participants were, and some of them still are, seriously, if not terminally, ill. And we can expect more accidents in the future, more victims to arise. Now, by analogy, the courts are our hospitals. And perhaps we should worry about their condition and whether we have enough qualified staff for them. It's indeed a little surprising that with all the debate about us, about the future of financial regulation and the statements being made and reported by politicians, by economists, by academics, by you, the regulatory community, and even by us, the legal profession, it's a little surprising that so little attention has been paid to our judges. Judges around the world who can be expected to interpret that regulation, fill in the gaps or resolve ambiguities in it, and peacefully settle any number of disputes, some of them highly complex and technical, that are likely to follow from the considerable losses, in some cases, the demise of major financial institutions or their counterparties. And that's what I want us to think about for the next 20 minutes. What role would we wish to see? What role would we wish to see our courts play in dealing with complex financial instruments, disputes arising from the financial crisis, and in due course, and most importantly, matters requiring interpretation of the new regulatory regime that you will be discussing today and tomorrow, and which will emerge from that crisis? Do we think that the courts, as presently constituted, are prepared to play that role? Is there more, in any event, that we could do, we, the markets, the regulatory community, and the legal profession, to ready them? Now, why do I think that courts are particularly relevant to your discussion of systemic risk? Well, for a start, courts are potentially an important ally of yours in the battle to guard against systemic risk in the financial markets. Courts in the United States and elsewhere have historically played a hugely important role in fleshing out securities regulation in the past by promoting legal certainty and, as a result, contributing to market stability. As law students and young lawyers, we were taught the black letter law, and we read the regulations designed to implement it. But we spent a lot more time reading the cases. We studied the cases. How much due diligence should I do in connection with this IPO that I'm working on? Well, this case told me what one lawyer did, and it wasn't enough. But that case tells me the story of a lawyer who did do enough. The facts will change, and the facts are always important. Intelligently interpreting financial market regulation in light of new facts is important too. Judges who understand finance can do this. The courts, therefore, are potentially your ally. However, when it comes to the derivatives markets that I watch so carefully and complex product litigation, as things stand now, the courts can be a source of systemic risk. And I'll tell you why I think that, and I suggest something that we can do about it. But first, two more reasons why I think this issue, the role of the courts, is so important at this particular juncture in time, certainly for derivatives product regulation and complex product litigation. First of all, the stakes are high. The amounts at risk are, well, they're staggering. The current size of the over-the-counter derivatives market alone, in terms of notional amounts outstanding, was last estimated to be $583 trillion in notional amount by the BIS. And we heard from the markets that but for the crisis, we might have by now, or certainly would have soon, crossed the $1 quadrillion threshold. More than 90%, $500 trillion of that $583 trillion amount is thought to be governed by a single standard contract in terms, the ISDA Master Agreement, and I'm viewed by the markets as the principal author of that contract, although in fact hundreds of lawyers over a period of 2.5 decades have contributed to that process. But $500 trillion on the back of one contract, I hope that we got it right. Anyway, for example, in a single pending case in which I am, I've currently been retained as an expert witness, the amount in dispute is approximately $1.5 billion. And the outcome may turn on the court's interpretation of two words, and that is the master agreement. And ladies and gentlemen, the cases are pouring in. So that's the first thing, that the there's a lot at stake, and the cases are omnipresent. The second point is that the stuff is complicated. The contracts, the issues, and the products, they're all complicated. And the track record of the courts to date is less than satisfactory. We now have significantly contradictory results on similar facts, even as between the New York and English courts. And thought of globally, the courts represent a very decentralized system. And we have no Supreme Court sitting on top of that that can fix things. The markets worry all the time. Wrong place, wrong party, judges and lawyers who would brief them who just don't get it. And the nature of the cases is evolving too, and that's important as well. Evolving from things that judges were comfortable with, even if their experience came from other contexts, even if the issues were maybe more dramatic in the derivatives marketplace. But issues like, did a party have the authority to enter into a swap? Or was entering into the contract outside its authority, ultra vires as to that party? Did an exchange of faxes or emails create a contract? And if so, on what terms? Counterparty relationships, did one party owe a duty of care to the other? These were issues which, as I say, judges knew well from other contexts. But now the issues can be very different. Flawed asset theory, anti-deprivation theory, formulaic calculations, modeling, subtle global insolvency proofing techniques that have been carefully woven into the fabric of our documents by those hundreds of lawyers over that period of 2.5 decades. The remedies, for example, in the derivatives market are very different from the remedies in the loan and bond markets, even though the cash flows may be very similar. Global market facts and practices are highly relevant and need to be understood and accounted for in the court proceedings. But there's little to demonstrate a propensity for this across all the courts that might now be hearing complex product litigation, and that's part of our challenge. In addition to these two factors, high stakes and complexity, there is a third issue of particular importance, and that's a phenomenon, and it's the phenomenon of standardization. Widespread usage of master contracts and standard terms across geographical, cultural, and language divides has great benefits. Legal certainty, huge cost efficiencies. We don't have a world parliament to legislate such matters, but the markets have created a kind of global law by contract. And that's potentially systemic risk reducing. But the corollary risk is that widespread usage of the same terms can amplify a court's mistake in deciding a term's proper meaning. That mistake goes whoosh, around the globe, affecting trillions of dollars of trades. As a result, the market, that is parties outside a particular dispute, may have a much greater interest in the outcome of a dispute than the private parties who are litigating the case. And the parties to a dispute may not spot an issue that is of importance to the market, or having spotted it, they may have difficulty finding the requisite experts to give evidence in court. They may not wish to, or they may not be able to spend all that it would take to get a right answer. And there may be other strategic reasons why a party may not frame or develop an issue that others in the market view as extremely important. And there are other challenges too. The difficulty of getting knowledgeable counsel who are not conflicted to hear the case. Conflict of interest rules, which were designed to protect clients, designed in the past as they were, in a very specialized universe with a small pool of knowledgeable litigators, may actually be have the opposite effect. They may actually create a race to the bottom. Third-party briefs, sometimes called amicus briefs, may be unavailable in certain jurisdictions, and so it may be difficult to get a market or regulator's view of the proceedings into the proceedings. And all of this may be a source of systemic risk. Can we see as a result, here's my radical thought, can we see as a result a blurring of lines in the kind of cases that I'm describing, lines that have traditionally, at least in common law courts, divided civil from criminal procedures? Consider the criminal case where party A shoots party B and stands trial. B says, you know what, I forgive you. Let's drop the case. State says, well, that's all well and good, but we have an issue with people using guns to settle their dispute. We have a public interest to protect. It's not for you alone to decide to settle this case. That is for the state to decide, and it's also for the state to decide how to progress this matter. Well, now that we've seen considerable systemic consequence for market defaults, not only for counterparties, but also for a wide range of stakeholders, including pensioners, even taxpayers, do we need a better way of ensuring that the more public and wider market interest in such cases is protected? There are two other factors worth mentioning very quickly. The first is we need a settled body, a settled and authoritative body of law for the global financial markets. We need at least to learn from our mistakes. We need to nurture a collective and probably specialist wisdom about the issues in these cases. This is, and the second point is that this is a very international affair, a particularly global business. We're apt to see two counterparties. For example, an African commodity producer hedging its risk with a European bank. Each possibly from a civil code jurisdiction, each possibly a native French speaker, but using an English language common law contract like the ISDA Master Agreement. Now, ideally, we would want judges who literally speak the language of the parties, judges with a strong comparative law background. Is it correct that the parties should need to fly to New York or London in order to settle their disputes, even if the judgments of those courts are not enforceable in the parties' home jurisdictions? So, decentralized courts, decentralized parties, common law contracts, civil code players, or perhaps Islamic finance-inspired market participants, complicated cases, a serious potential for wrong results, and a disaster if we get wrong results. What can we do about this? What would move things forward to in a more positive way? Well, I hope it'll be received as good news that some of us are trying proactively to make a difference. 6 months ago, convened by Lord Wolfe, the former Lord Chief Justice of England and Wales, and with support from the Dutch authorities, more than 60 senior experts quietly gathered in the Peace Palace in The Hague to brainstorm about this particular issue. There were among the 60 20 legal practitioners from 12 different countries who collectively represented 500 lawyer years of counseling in the derivatives markets. There were also another 20 from the market itself, CEOs, CLOs, dealers, buy side, several former chairmen of ISDA, including the first ever chairman of ISDA, and other and leaders of other relevant trade bodies, the Nat Velink, the president of the Dutch Central Bank and chairman of the Basel Committee on Banking Supervision was there, and senior figures, many of them participating in their individual capacities from the European Central Bank, the New York Fed, the SEC, and some of the leading academics of the field also had gathered. But perhaps most importantly, senior judges from as far away as the Delaware Supreme Court on the one hand, the Australian Federal Court, the New Zealand Court of Appeals on the other, and from other national and state courts. And we worked hard then. We worked hard then, and with continued Dutch government support, we have worked hard since. And I'm amazed. I'm amazed and gratified by the progress that has been made. Some of you may have seen some recent press coverage in The Economist, in other national papers, and in the trade press. And I'm pleased to report that we hope to announce this summer the formation of what we're calling Prime Finance, a panel of recognized international markets in finance, prime finance, not subprime finance, a truly international panel of the senior-most legal and market experts in the field, committed to providing training for judges in national courts, expert testimony, advisory opinions, and where appropriate, mediation and arbitration services as well. This is dispute settlement support, not just for the cases between big banks or between big banks and their most sophisticated customers. But this is also dispute settlement for the developing markets as well. Dispute settlement for clearinghouses and between clearinghouses and their members or between clearinghouses and their members' customers. And remember, we will have issues between clearinghouses established in different jurisdictions, and all of that, to my mind, in the discussion of central clearing has been given short shrift. There are some very thorny legal issues, many of them untested, as we look out in that direction. The less sophisticated procedures, the rule books of the past, are unlikely to fully be up to the task of settling these disputes. Yet the decisions in future may have greater systemic consequence. Now, in this process, we intend to take advantage of another phenomenon, a sociological phenomenon, and that is that we are about to graduate by retirement a generation of market participants and their advisors, the real experts in this field. They understand it. They built the legal structure and theory and infrastructure of the derivatives and structured finance industry through the formative years of the business. And they need your support. There is, I promise you, considerable mutuality of interest. Remember, the courts can be your ally. The courts can be your ally in promoting financial stability, but from where we currently stand, looking out around the wider world, they can also be a source of systemic risk. So as you continue your discussion of systemic risk, think about the courts and judges. When you talk about corporate governance, think about the rule of law. And when you talk about consumer education, think also about judicial education as well. Just to conclude then, financial market law litigation is probably increasing. It is certainly potentially complicated, and partly because of standard contracts and terms and the volume of trading covered by these, wrong decisions threaten systemic risk. In this sense, at least, the interest of the markets and of regulators in the outcome of a case may be far greater than the interest of the parties to that case. Current reliance on national tribunals of general jurisdiction and ad hoc arbitration is unsatisfactory. It's too decentralized, too inefficient, and too expensive, and perhaps most importantly, it is failing to produce a settled and authoritative body of law with the predictability that the markets crave and on which financial stability may depend. Let me leave you then with a question. Why do we have special subject matter courts for everything from family law to trade to tax and insolvency, but in many key jurisdictions, and indeed in most jurisdictions, at least at national level, we don't have dedicated courts for finance? Do we need a world financial court? Think about it. World trade benefits from the WTO tribunal and the dedicated bar it has nurtured. Is international finance law any less global, less complicated, or less systemically relevant than international trade law? I don't think so. But what do you think? Some say that creating a truly world court for finance is too ambitious, that it would take too long, that we haven't got that long to wait. Maybe, but I say, if that's right, then we should roll up our sleeves, not put all our eggs in a regulatory basket, and start training our judges on derivatives right away. Ladies and gentlemen, best of wishes with your deliberations that will follow. I will be around today and tomorrow and be delighted to talk about any of the issues I've raised with any of you in much greater detail. But right now, I want to thank you for the attention you've given me. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jeff. That was very, very informative. Systemic risk is just so topical at this point in time. Financial issues with systemic implications are complex. Over the last couple of days, we've spent a lot of time examining measures that are being taken to try and curb what could actually turn out to be a demon. But in these discussions, we have spent so little time talking about what are obviously very, very complex legal issues. Perhaps that will inform some of our deliberations going into the future. We have just a couple of minutes, and Jeff will be happy to take one or two questions before we move on to the panel discussion. So it's a bit difficult to see from here. Are there any questions? Yes, please.
but somebody else to shoulder the responsibility, the judges, and you shouldn't be carrying all that responsibility yourselves.
As you know, I will.